Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Divine Manifesting Show with Christy Whitman and Rebecca Grotto. Hey, Rebecca.
Hey, Christy, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good.
How's California?
You know what? Northern California is absolutely beautiful. I think I'm just, something's wrong with me, because every season I'm like, this is my favorite season. And people are like, you're such a liar. You said that about summer. But I think I really have chosen. Fall is so beautiful right now. The weather has been great, and just absolutely gorgeous. So I'm thriving. How are you? You're in New York?
Yes, I'm in Manhattan, and it's kind of chilly today, but it's absolutely beautiful. And I was in upstate New York yesterday, and all the leaves are changing, and like you do, I just absolutely love fall. There's something so magical about this time of year. It's like things seem to manifest. It seems to start a whole new cycle. It's just mm-hmm. a beautiful time of year. So.
It really is, yeah.
Yeah. Well, today I'm very honored. We've had some really amazing guests the past couple of weeks and past month. We've been having all these amazing guests come to us and say, have us on your show. So, we're both up to, like, absolutely, of course. And I think we're really going to have a lot of fun today because I know that, talking about Christ is something that you and I have always felt very, very connected to. I know that both of us have felt that at some time in our past lives we've walked with Christ or, been a disciple of him. And, I just feel very, very connected to him. And not even so much in the religious sense and in the, Catholic or Christian traditions, but more in the spiritual sense and what Christ really, Jesus himself really stood for and the teachings that he had. And today I'm just honored to invite an author that wrote a book called Your Forgotten Self. And it really is, about how, Jesus' teachings and what he really was trying to teach us. So I would really like to welcome David Ord. Hi, David.
Hi, it's nice to be with you today.
Thank you for being here. David,
and I'm in Louisiana, not far from New Orleans, and the weather is absolutely fabulous here, too, about a 75-degree day.
It's 65 degrees in New Orleans?
I'm in Baton Rouge. I used to be in New Orleans area in the North Shore before the Great Deluge.
Right, right. Well, Baton Rouge is so beautiful. Yeah,
it's lovely at this time of year.
Yes. Oh, how gorgeous. Wonderful. So,
well, David, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to write on the book, how you came to write your book, Your Forgotten Self, and really kind of take us through who you are, what you're all about, because as my mentors have always said, people won't listen to you until they know who you are. So go ahead and give our listeners a little bit of information about your background and how you came to write a book like this.
I grew up in the Church of England in the town of Harrogate in Yorkshire, famous, of course, for Yorkshire puddings and All Creatures Great and Small, the books and the television series that was on PBS. And that was the first 21 years of my life in England, and I grew up with a pretty standard Christianity, and then in my teens got into more of the Billy Graham sort of message, and then explored different avenues until my late 20s, and I began to be exposed to a little scholarship. And when that started to happen, my entire understanding of the Bible, Jesus, changed. Began to realize that really the message I had heard about Jesus had nothing to do with the Jesus of the Gospels. It's an entirely different message. It's not at all faithful to what Jesus taught or what he was really like. And so over the years, I began exploring Jesus from different angles, and the more I got into the texts of the New Testament and understood what they meant in their time and the language that was used and the culture that they were a part of, the more I began to see that the last 2,000 years of church history is in many ways a betrayal of what Jesus was all about. So that's how my journey got going. And then I found, of course, there was a tremendous impact in my life once I began to understand Jesus differently. Because what I find among so many Christians is they have a great longing in their hearts. There's a yearning, there's a thirst, a hunger. And it never seems to get satisfied. It has moments when they feel good, but overall, that yearning, that seeking, that searching goes on and on and on. And I find that to be a real contradiction of the teaching of Jesus. I think of the woman at the well who I talk about in the book, Your Forgotten Self, who Jesus met. She was a Samaritan woman. And he said that if he were to give her the water of life, she would never thirst again. she would never need to go back seeking, searching, looking for answers in her life. And she received the answers she was looking for. She came to understand. She said, he told me everything I ever did. Of course, it's not that he recounted the events of her life. But what he did is he opened up the meaning, the significance of everything that had happened to her, so that she could see the divine hand that had always been at work in her life, bringing her to a state of enlightenment. And when the light went on for her, she saw life very differently. Now, that's been my experience. All the searching, the longing, the yearning, the hunger, the thirst ended. And I came into the kind of joy unspeakable that is related to Jesus, the peace that passes understanding, that's just beyond comprehension. Doesn't matter what's going on in your life, there is still this deep peace underneath all of that turbulence. And into the kind of love that comes from a sense of the oneness of everything, rather than a God who's separated from us, a God who we have to appeal to in some way, to see God as in us, in the whole creation, and we in God. As the book of Acts says, in God we live and move and have our being. So that's been a huge change in my life, just bringing that fulfillment, that excitement, that satisfaction, that wonderful consolation in life that we all long for. So that's my story in a nutshell.
How did that impact you going through Katrina? I'm just thinking, you know, did you had already written this book when Katrina hit, or was it, you know, were you in the process of writing it? And how did you hold all that was going on and all the devastation with this new perspective?
I'm having a little trouble with a little blurring of the sound coming over, but I think you're saying to me, how did I integrate this new perspective into a book? Is that what you're asking?
Yes. In relation to Katrina, when all that happened in New Orleans.
How did I understand the Katrina situation in that?
Yes.
You know, the word Katrina means cleansing.
Oh, that's great.
And that's a remarkable thing, really.
Uh-huh.
That doesn't mean it's been a cleansing in everyone's life necessarily, but it certainly was in mine.
Mm-hmm.
I had been living on the North Shore, having lived for many years in New Orleans itself. And, of course, the North Shore is where the hurricane hit full force, but not the water problems. And I watched so many people's lives be devastated by this. Yet in a remarkable way, I have seen also incredible transformation in some of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly in my life there has been. You know, it's when you... Well, I have another book. It's an audio book from Namaste Publishing called Lessons in Loving, Journey into the Heart. And it is also new out. And it is about the story of the Little Prince, which Antoine de Saint-Exupéry wrote, and it was published in, I think, 1944. And for about 60 years... this book has been touching the lives of so many people because it talks about a pilot who had been flying solo in life, and now his solo plane crashes in the Sahara Desert. And he's 1,000 miles from any inhabited place, all alone. And there appears to him this little fella from the skies, from a planet, an asteroid, the Little Prince. And he begins introducing him to himself in a new way. So that crash in the desert, that sense of being isolated, I think is what happened in so many people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And when you come to terms with that, you begin an exploration that leads you to an amazing thing, and that is the realization that there is a well in the desert.
Mm-hmm.
And this well is there bubbling and brimming with wonderful life-giving water, all set to be drunk and enjoyed.
Yeah.
And I guess that's what I have found.
Uh-huh.
Katrina was sort of that last push with me that really shoved me into finding the answers I was looking for deep within my own self, where I am connected to divinity, one with the whole creation, one with everyone. And this is, of course, what Jesus represents, that oneness.
Right. And I'm thinking as you're saying this, David, you know... not too many of us would change and would allow ourselves to be purified, but not for the pain that sometimes crashing in the desert causes. So, you know, it's like, I don't know if we would voluntarily make some of these changes unless we're out all alone and and lost in the desert, and it's through that pain, through the suffering, that we end up looking for something, you know, different and more. We're ready to hold on to or reach out for. So
you know, when change began in my life a number of years ago along these lines, I had a tremendous resistance to it. And it took a lot of shake-ups to break me loose of the old way of being that I had grown up in. Mm-hmm. They are deaths. Mm-hmm. I mean, the metaphor in Scripture of dying and rising again, it's not about a physical body being raised. It is about who we are in our essence coming to life.
Yes.
And the old person we have known ourselves to be, the person in our head, the image we have of ourselves that we carry around with us, the emotional reactivity that is all a part of that, our entire approach to life isn't who we really are. Mm-hmm. And that's what has to crash in the desert or be cleansed by a Katrina.
Exactly.
And
we
then
die
we
to
are
the
opened
old
up to find our real being.
Exactly. We die
but
to the old
me,
reality.
But for me, when this all started, I had this tremendous resistance to it years ago. And yet, I think there comes a point in our journey which we come to the place of saying, instead of fighting it, instead of saying, I don't want to be proved wrong again, you begin to welcome being wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You begin to welcome the deaths, and you start to enjoy the new that comes each time a death occurs.
Mm-hmm.
Eckhart Tolle, you know, who wrote the flagship book of Namaste Publishing, I'm the editorial director at Namaste Publishing, and Eckhart says that he doesn't believe that we have to go on suffering in order to grow into the fullness of this life.
Mm-hmm.
That we could reach a point where it's not necessary to have our heads banged against the wall or crash in a desert, that we can actually begin to welcome this change and step into it without all of the pain.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I find is happening in my life now. And I think that's what Jesus was inviting people into, what he called abundant life.
Mm-hmm. But sometimes, you know, when sometimes, like you said, we're resistant to it, and we need those, you know, those big dramatic crashes in the desert. But I think what you're saying is they end up becoming our grace, and if we can hold them as our grace, you know, maybe in the moment they don't feel like the grace, but if you can look back and maybe with the new perspective, look for the silver lining, look for the grace in all crises, then it makes it a little easier, and I know Christy and I are firm believers in we don't always have to learn through pain. We can learn through joy. So we can,
amen, sister.
Yeah, we can become better students and not having to have the huge crashes in the desert. Maybe we can just have a little nudge on the shoulder. Yeah, absolutely.
And we can begin to actually actively seek for change, because this is certainly what Jesus was like in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Brown, who has presented the world with this wonderful book, The Presence Process, another Namaste Publishing book, and is following it up with a new one that will be released shortly, he talks about how we can begin to see everything in our lives, all of the situations that we're in, as setups that our inner being has invited us into, that they might reflect back to us what it is we have yet to see about ourselves. Because we are brilliant, wonderful, gorgeous, fabulous human beings. And we don't see that about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We've
well, David, I was just going to say in your book, it's like on page 29, you write, and I just have to say your book is one of those books, like I've read Eckhart Tolle's books, and it's one of those books where your consciousness, you could feel your consciousness expanding as you're reading it, and I felt the same way about your book. And on page 29, you have, we don't see our potential, and throughout most of history have been taught to deny its very existence. And traditionally, societies have stressed that we know our place, and most of us learn to see ourselves as just average, certainly nothing special. And this is why we need Jesus. He functions as a mirror of our potential. In him, we see a reflection of who we really are. And I thought, oh, that was so beautiful because it's so true. I mean, everything that he was able to manifest, everything that he was able to heal, the power that he had, it exists within each and every one of us.
And you see, it reverses everything I grew up learning in church, because what Jesus did was to show me how bad I was, how pitiful I was, how hopeless and helpless I was,
mm-hmm.
and that without God's intervention, I would be nothing.
Right.
And it's just the opposite of that.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus comes into our lives to show us that it is the world that has taught us. From childhood up, we've breathed the foul air of self-doubt. It has taught us to hate ourselves, loathe ourselves, not care about ourselves, allow things in our lives that shouldn't be allowed, and make a big mess of our lives, and then we feel bad about it.
Yeah.
Whereas what Jesus does is, he shows us we are fabulous creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing wrong with us is we don't believe it. It's
yes.
a complete lack of faith.
Yes. Isn't it Marianne Williamson who says, is it a line from The Course in Miracles who says the only thing that Jesus said, we have nothing, or he has nothing that we don't have within us. The only difference is we have all sorts of other things around
yep.
us, like doubt and fear and, you know, where we self-negating beliefs. And so what you're saying is absolutely, David, speaking the truth to me. It is just, like you said, Christy, it just resonates to your soul. And
Marianne Williamson is also the one who made that wonderful statement that who do we think we
yes.
are not to be these wonderful things?
Yes.
Our playing small serves nobody any
exactly.
good.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know?
That was probably one of the best speeches, one of the best poems, however you want to, you know. It's just so beautiful that, you know, it's like, you know, our greatest fear is not that we are, you know, inadequate,
we're
but we are.
Yes. We're powerful beyond measure.
Yes,
yeah.
Powerful beyond measure. Oh.
And you see, that's what the fear of God is, too. It's not only our greatest fear, but our real fear of God isn't that God is judging us as these pathetic creatures. Our real fear of God is that God is judging us as these fantastic people and trying to get us to wake up to who we are.
Yes. Yes.
We fear being totally, unconditionally accepted, loved, embraced.
Mm-hmm.
We fear that.
And we
mirror that fear in our own ability to get past this need to constantly apologize for ourselves. We are endlessly apologized for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I see that a lot in my coaching clients where they're so, I mean, every person is so powerful, and my coaching clients have so much. And Rebecca, I know you see this in your clients that you have therapy with, that they're so amazing, and if they would just let go of the, you know, the beliefs that they took on that are not truth, and
mm-hmm.
the doubts and the, you know, the fears and those type of things, that, you know, we would be just like Jesus, completely 100% in alignment. And it's all that other stuff. It's like we talk about when manifesting things, it's the doubt, it's the fear, it's the anger, it's all that resistance that we have that keeps us apart from truly being and feeling a sense of peace, and, you know, not only wanting to manifest the things that we want, but truly living from that soul-connected place.
Yeah, books like yours, David, though, you're absolutely right, Christy, and you know, your book is just coming out at a time where I think it is, I just feel it so passionately within myself, it is time that we reveal ourselves as the absolute magnificent creatures that we are. And I know Christy and I are just so impassioned about getting women to feel that. I mean, everything we talk about is, you know, it's time for women to stand up and know that they are glorious, absolutely glorious beings such as they are. And, you know, as you're saying this, it's like it's time. It is time that we quit playing small. And
Men and women
and recognize. So I'm just like, just so honored that you are bringing this book out and giving people permission to step into their absolute Christ self. You know, that is, I just can't wait to get it. And I went online to Namaste Publishing, by the way, and your 5-CD set, oh my gosh, that, I'm there too. That just sounded phenomenal. David, I mean, where does this inspiration come from?
You know, I was given by a friend 7 years ago, I think it was, a copy of The Little Prince. I had never read it before.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't 8 or 9 pages in when I just suddenly began to see that this whole book was not about what it appeared to be talking about. And I began to talk about it and share it with others. And
mm-hmm.
I ended up writing the book out of it, and then we've put it out first as an audio book. And when I really saw from beginning to end how The Little Prince is woven together, I said to myself, this has got to be one of the most inspired works in history.
Mm-hmm.
This is epic proportions in spirituality. It's a fantastic story. Now, many of us have heard quotes from The Little Prince, you know, like seeing with the eyes of the heart and that sort of thing. But I've never seen the whole thing unwrapped in this way, because there's not a statement in there that doesn't fit this incredible jigsaw picture that shows us what real spirituality is all about. And that's available exclusively from www.namastepublishing.com. You can't get that elsewhere.
I love the way you say namaste. Namaste.
Namaste, yes. It's my
it sounds
name.
So good with your accent.
That comes out here. But I was thinking of a few other things that you triggered for me in what you were saying a moment ago. Driving home here for this interview a little while ago, I was listening to National Public Radio, and they had an interview with someone who is presently demonstrating about the quality of programming on BET, Black Entertainment Television. And the black women, you were talking about the women needed to stand up, the black women are beginning to stand up and say, we don't want this low-life quality of television that puts women down, that uses nasty terms for us, that speaks in us in ugly ways. And I thought, you go, girl.
Yes.
That's what's needed. Someone has to stand up to the rappers. You know, you can't just say anything. Freedom of speech doesn't mean you can say anything. I mean, you can't, for example, say, I want to shoot the President of the United States. It's illegal to make that kind of statement.
Right.
So the way that we put women's lives at risk by the way we talk about them needs to be challenged. And I was thrilled to hear that.
You know, and we've had other people on this show before, and you know, and that has come out where it's not going to stop until we recognize within ourselves that that is dissonant, that that doesn't work. When you say that to me, when you speak to me in that term, everything is within me rises up and says, oh, no, you didn't. Just go there. You know, and we've talked about that on other shows where it really is, you know, it's having so much love for yourself. It's recognizing who you are at such a deep level that you would never allow another human being to speak in those ways about you. I often say, I have a daughter. I have a beautiful, pure, you know, just brilliant 15-year-old. And if anybody ever spoke derogatively to her, you would feel the wrath of my sword, my warrior sword. I would just go, you know, I would protect her. That would not be acceptable in her presence. And I feel like as women, as human beings, we need to take a stance and say there are things that are acceptable in my presence, and there are other things that are absolutely unacceptable and will not be tolerated. So as you say this, David, it's like everything in me is rising up going absolutely right on. We've got to take a stance.
Well, I want to take it a step further, though. It's what we tell ourselves. It's not even just
there
so much, it's the rappers and, you know, it's the stuff on television and, you know, people, the way we treat each other. But it really comes down to the way we treat ourselves and how we speak to ourselves and, you know, the pressures that we put on ourselves or the things that we, the limits that we put on ourselves.
The way we criticize ourselves, right? Absolutely, Christy.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 and it's really, but I think what you're saying, David, is, you know, when you recognize who resides within you, when you recognize the glory and the majesty that resides within you and what you are capable of, you will no longer allow others to speak to you in this way, and you will definitely no longer speak to yourself in this way. You'll have honor and respect. And
you bring a loving presence to such people, which is of course what Jesus did, and you shine the light on it. You tell them, you know, this is not who I am, and this is not the way I wish to be spoken to. It's just so crucial. Another thought that you brought to my mind with some of the comments you made about this whole message at this time needing to get out into the broader Christian world. And this is where we have to appeal to people like your listeners to help us with this, because the only way it's going to happen is one-to-one sharing this kind of information. Christmas is coming up. These are fabulous gifts, these books, to give to people at this time of year, because they're inoffensive and yet they're absolutely mind-blowing at the same time. We're in a situation now, what with global warming and the alienation of the Christian, sort of Judeo-Christian side of the world from the Muslim world and so forth, that we're headed towards some very dangerous times if we don't change course.
Absolutely.
And it's not going to come just through new thought people who we all come into our nice little paradise and we enjoy the fruits of understanding who we really are. That's not going to be enough. We're too small in number. We are here to seed the world with this knowledge. And if this doesn't get into mainstream Christianity, whereby people begin to understand Jesus in a whole new way, the game is going to be lost. Our world is so desperately in need of this now in a geopolitical sense.
Mm-hmm. I love your passion.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it would be a great gift because people that are very, Catholic or even Christian, this book would not at all be offensive to them because it's not saying that, you know, their religion's wrong or anything like that. It just gives them a deeper sense, truly, of what Jesus' teachings were and, you know, what the true meaning was and how he really resonated in his own life, how he vibrated in his own life, how he taught, you know, just by example in his own life and, you know, the people that were around him, how they learned from him. And, you know, one thing that I think, Rebecca, when you read this book, and I'm just going to share with you now, is, you know, when Rebecca and I do our self-love course for women, you know, we talk about how there's self-love and then there's, like, an egotistical love. And yes. David writes about in his book that he wasn't in love with himself in, like, a high and mighty way that, you know, people who are self-absorbed and are in love with themselves. Mm-hmm. On the contrary, he shocked his followers by washing their dusty feet, which was the work of a common servant. He was simply loving in the way he felt loved. And he definitely vibrated in that sense of self-love. And he knew who he was, but he wasn't in that egotistical, arrogant, you know,
right.
type of I'm better than you type of love.
And we really need to reconcile that. I think most people, when we talk about self-love, go to the ego sense of self-love. And, you know, I think, you know, the first step is really reconciling. This has nothing to do with arrogance or ego-based, you know, loving ourselves. That's all fear-based. That's coming from the lower self and, you know, beating our chest and saying, aren't I grand and aren't I so much better than you? And, you
trying
know,
to prove something we don't really believe we are.
Exactly, exactly. I always say it's like the emperor's new clothes. Boy, you know, everybody believe I'm mighty and well-clothed, but the truth is I'm naked underneath this. That's not it at all. This is really almost surrendering to and opening.
Well, that's a really good word, actually, surrendering.
Yes. It's
a deep appreciation for who we are.
Yes. Oh, that's it. It really is just opening to and surrendering that there is something so much greater deep within not only myself but every other human being on this planet, every other sentient being on this planet. There's something so much more magnificent. So, yes, when we surrender to that, boy, ego is absolutely cast aside and it has nothing to do with chest beating and competition and
no.
and all of that. It's a very humble. So when you said that, Christy, it's like it's that feeling takes you to such a humble place, to such a grand and spectacular yet very, very humble place. So,
you know, I grew up believing that God loved me in spite of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And what I came to see through Jesus as I really got into his mind and heart is that God loves me because of who I am.
Yes. Oh. I often say to clients, David, you know, when they're really wrestling with this, and it's like, you know, I work with so many people who, my gosh, their hearts are so beautiful, and they just see the beauty in everybody else, but when it comes to themselves, they just, oh, I don't see it. And an exercise I give them is sometimes I say, you know, if you could borrow God's eyes, if you could just look at yourself for a moment through God's eyes, what would you see? And, you know, what you're saying is, I truly don't believe, and I've never heard anybody tell me that God sees them, you know, and loves them despite their failings. It's always this sense of, you really see me in that way? And I feel, you know, that all God sees is just our absolute perfection, our absolute divinity. And it raises us up, and it's like, okay, now if I can only borrow those eyes every moment of the day to know myself as I truly am, I'll be so much farther along on this journey. But,
you know, let someone put us down, let someone derogate us, and we may agree with them for a moment, but then there is something in us that rises up and just hates to feel that that's the way we are.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that reality is that we're not that way. There's
mm-hmm.
a deeper part of us that knows better and lets someone put us down, and that part rises to the fore.
Mm-hmm.
It knows that we're not this horrible person we have thought we are.
Yeah.
You know, there is a great strength in some of the Christian teachings that can be lost so easily in the New Thought movement. And that is that some of these doctrines were formed to address issues that are real. Let's take, for example, the one of original sin, which is a very Catholic and Church of England kind of doctrine. You know, and I'm not talking about something being passed on through sex and all the rest of it, which is just nonsense. But I'm talking about the sense that when we come into the world, there is a condition in the world that is negative, that puts people down, that we imbibe from the moment we start breathing.
Mm-hmm.
From the moment we come into the world, in everything around us, we begin to get the sense that we are less than who we really are.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense, it's original sin.
Mm-hmm.
It is here before us, and it infects us before we ever have a chance to grow up enough and have a brain to be able to say, that's not true.
Right.
And so we become infected with self-doubt from the beginning.
We're flawed
by... There is great strength in a reinterpretation of these doctrines to bring them in line with what Jesus really taught.
It tells us that we're flawed by design. So the rest of our lives we're spent trying to overcome that,
yes.
Which is ridiculous. Yeah.
It's silly.
Mm-hmm.
And
what
fact,
do you
it's just
feel...
the opposite.
What
you know, if you look at the Adam and Eve in the garden story,
mm-hmm.
I mean, what I learned is their sin was that they rebelled against God.
Mm-hmm.
When I read Genesis 2, I don't see that at all. Their sin was that they had been made in the image of God, and along comes the serpent and tells them, well, you need to become like God. You need to become wise.
Mm-hmm.
And their sin was that they didn't believe they already were. They started to think that they were less than they were. They
mm-hmm.
were the image of God. They were wise. They were all they needed to be, but they began to doubt it. Now, that's what's wrong with the whole world.
I was just going to say that. I was going to say that is exactly what we all do every day, though.
It is.
When I get this promotion, when I get over here, when I get this new job or this, you know, I lose 50 pounds or when I find my mate or when I finally arrive, then I will know I'm worthy. But
yeah.
The truth is we already are worthy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's...
You know, Jesus is the light of the world, he says. And then he turns around and he says, you are the light of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you're meant to be a city set on a hill where everyone can see it. Don't hide your lamp under something where its light can't shine anymore. So our glorious light of who we are is what can transform our lives and to transform the lives of other people. This is the conversion experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's not me being this horrible worm needing to become something good. It's me recognizing that I've seen myself as a worm when I'm not. And
right.
Repentance is to turn around and believe the opposite about myself. It's to become, as Jesus said, like little children. Unless you convert and become like a little child, you can't see the kingdom of heaven, he says.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's exactly true. We don't see God in the whole of our lives. We don't see the divine in everything that's going on, which is what the kingdom of God is, the presence, the reign of the divine in our lives. We don't see that unless we become childlike again. Unless we go back to that time before we were messed up by all the negative stuff we've come to believe ourselves.
Yeah.
And little children, what are they like? They're spontaneous. They believe in themselves. They're fun. They're excited. They're loving. They're connected. This is what we are invited into.
Yeah,
that's, of course, the story of the little prince, too.
Yes.
It's all about the adults are the problem. We need to become like little children in that sense. Not
yes.
Childish, but childlike.
To reclaim that part of ourselves. Christy and I write in our book about that. We have, you know, like, I remember watching my daughter when she was so little, and she just knew how glorious she was.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, my prayer was never forget this. This is who you are. And it always reminded me, David, that there's a little her in me. I
yes.
used to be that. I used to know at some time. And I remember this distinctly, and I think most people, if they really search their minds, they will remember that time when they were little, when they just knew how glorious they were. And it
yeah.
wasn't about I was so much more. I watched my daughter and you know, with her little playmates, and they were just all, you know, they were just fabulous. And they weren't trying to be more fabulous than one another. They just exuded that, like, oh, my gosh.
That's who they were. Joie de vivre.
Yeah, I take my own breath away kind of feeling.
Yeah.
Like, I would watch them just strutting, and they were so fabulous. And
which is why Jesus said, let the children come to me, when
yeah.
the adults were trying to send them away. And says, you've got to become like these little children.
Yeah.
That's what the kingdom of God is all about.
it's like an unabashed, just, oh, I don't know, I don't have the word. It's just like at the core of your soul, you know that you are all that. You know that you have every, there's nothing missing, you know.
You know, if you want a good translation for the word sin, which we're supposed to repent of, a good word for that is inauthenticity.
Oh, that's
perfect. We have to repent of our inauthenticity. The word sin is a word that comes from archery. It's you fire an arrow and you miss the mark. So when we aren't true to ourselves, when we miss being who we are, when we're, in other words, inauthentic, mm-hmm. we become unreal, phony, wear a mask, and pretend. Michael Brown was here in Baton Rouge some weeks ago and gave this most marvelous weekend. And he talked about how when we're little kids, and let's say someone's coming over to our house, and we're so excited and we want to jump up and down and dance, company's coming, guests are coming, and then we want to run up to them and hug them and say, hey, I'm so thrilled to see you. And we learn to stand there and hold out our hand as little gentlemen and say, mm-hmm. hello, how are you? You know, and we suppress all the exuberance of life. And we become inauthentic.
Yeah.
So then we grow up to be cool people who, hey, how's it going? We'd really love to grab the person and hug them and say, I'm so glad you're here.
Yeah.
But we don't do this.
Oh, and I think women are famous for that. We were talking about this last week where, how are you doing? Fine. Everything's good. You know, we're supposed to smile sweetly and just, you know, and everything's just great. And we're not honest. We're not conditioned, or we're not given permission to say, you know, I'm over here today, or I don't feel like being, you know, sweet and friendly, and I'm actually quiet and still within myself. But, you know, when we're inauthentic, a lot of times I can raise my hand and say, I know I've been there. People will say, how are you doing? Oh, I'm great. How are you? And I'm thinking, you know, that's not really where I am. Where I am is very quiet and still inside, and why can't I just say, you know, I mean, people expect me to be this, you know, happy-go-lucky personality, and it's like, well, sometimes that's not the truth of where I am. I'm very quiet and still, or somber, or whatever. So I think, you know, the opposite can be true, too, is that oftentimes we're asked to put on this happy-go-lucky face. It's all good, and that's not the truth. And I just think that chips away at us. It's like you said, it's a sin. It's us being inauthentic and not being true to ourselves. The greatest gift.
You know, the whole way Jesus comes across as the light of the world is that which shines light into darkness. Mm-hmm. Wherever we're hiding who we really are, wherever we're not being authentic, being true, being real and genuine, the light shines in there. And of course, the whole thing about being born again, it's not about some decision taken in a church or some camp meeting or something to accept Jesus into your life or something of that kind. It's got nothing to do with that. Being born again is literally starting our lives all over again as the person we were originally meant to be, because we start becoming authentic like Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Shoot for the mark again. Go for the authenticity. Yeah, that's really well put. Wow. I feel like every listener on this call, you know, I don't think anybody needs another pair of jammies or a warm pair of socks this year. This is the perfect gift to give to everybody that you love. I feel like, you know, go straight to the Namaste website and, you know, buy it in quantities. This is what a perfect gift. To give
and of course, you can buy it. You can buy it in all your bookstores. If they don't have it in right now, they can get it within a day or two. It's out widely. You can get it on Amazon and Barnes and Noble online. All of these places as well.
Wonderful, wonderful.
In fact, the more people buy it in bookstores, the more they'll carry it, and the more people around this Christmas season are going to see that book about Jesus and say, "Oh, that's an interesting one to give at this time of year."
So that's another thing that we can all do, is we can, you know, pop into our local bookstores and make sure we're asking for it, that we're asking them to have that stocked.
It will start a revolution within Christianity.
Yeah.
I was amazed. My son has someone who's an adopted grandmother to him. She's 85 years of age now. And many years ago, when he was 5 years of age, he's now 23, he met her. And she's very traditional Baptist Christian, so forth. And, you know, I said, do you think I should give her a copy of my book? He said, oh, Dad, I don't know that you should do that. Mm-hmm. But I said, well, you know, you've not read the book. So anyway, we gave her a copy. Well, she came back and asked for three more to give to friends.
Oh,
so I think you can tell how this book will be received. Now, by the same token, when we were looking at publishing this book from Namaste Publishing, which is, of course, famous for The Power of Now and Michael Brown's work and that sort of thing, Constance Kellow raised the question, I wonder if the New Age, New Thought people who tend to buy our books a lot, I wonder if they will buy this book on Jesus if they would like this. Well, amazingly, we're getting a fantastic response because what they're saying is, I had given up on Christianity, and this is restoring my faith in and understanding of Jesus.
And I want to say, too, if there's any listeners that want to call in and ask David a question, obviously you're on the website right now, so you can go to channel number 2 and call in, and David, I'm sure, would be happy to answer any questions that any of you may have. So I just wanted to throw that out.
Oh, thanks, Christy. Yeah, absolutely. And I think even those who have a deep love and a deep affinity for Christ, you know, I feel like this is just giving a greater, like you said, Christy, it expands your consciousness. It just gives, you know, something that I think we all know in our heart. I don't know about other listeners. I know this was very true for me is, I went to Catholic school, and I think my entire 7 years there at Catholic school was recognizing that that was not the truth. There were many grains of truth in what I was given, but in my heart, I knew my relationship with Christ or with, you know, or just my relationship with God. It, you know, it resonated at a very different place for me. And as you're talking, David, this is in alignment with what I knew to be true as a 6-year-old, a 7-year-old, an 8-year-old. And so I feel like, you know, even for all those listeners who have a good relationship, you know, with the Christ of their heart, I think they will find something wonderful in this, and it might just be that, yeah, I knew that. That was more my truth. That aligns more with what I knew to be true. Sometimes we're just looking for that affirmation, that validation of what, you know, what we kind of knew to be true.
Yes.
Yeah.
We haven't wanted to throw the baby out with the bathwater, yet we haven't known how to keep the baby in. And you know, this much of what I understand in this book came from a Catholic monk who turns 90 this December. He's at Downside Abbey in England. His name is Sebastian Moore. And he opened my eyes to much of what I've come to see. He's the one who taught me that original sin is just the opposite, the way of it's taught, that it's the fact we don't believe in ourselves rather than the fact that we do believe in ourselves. Mm-hmm. He's the one who taught me so much of this understanding of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have to say the small church that I go to here in Baton Rouge, the minister's read the book several times, and he told the congregation, he said, y'all need to read this book.
Mm.
So I think it can be well received within Christianity.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Was it Thomas Keating? Is he, I think he, you were saying Moore. You were saying, was it Thomas Moore or who were you?
No, Sebastian Moore.
Sebastian Moore.
Yes, I've also read Thomas Moore.
Yes, and I think it's Keating, who's, I think he's an 83-year-old Catholic from the Abbey that you were talking about, and he's very much into contemplative religion and prayer. And he has a congregation in Snowmass, Colorado. But as you were saying that, I was just connecting the two, thinking, you know, I don't think these contradict one another, and I think more and more of the traditional religions are opening and expanding to the more contemplative, the more expansive view of, you know, our saints and sages and our, you know, key players in our religion. So I hear what you're saying. It has nothing to do with contradicting or offending.
No, not at all.
No, it's an integration.
It's fullness of meaning.
Yes.
And the linchpin of the whole thing is our understanding of the nature of Jesus. Because what I grew up believing is that Jesus is fundamentally a different kind of being from me. And if that's true, then I know have no hope of ever been like him.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that's not what the scripture teaches. It teaches that he is the firstborn of many brothers and sisters, mm-hmm. that he is the one who has the preeminence in the sense that he shows us who we really are.
Right.
He served that role of being the one who is the epitome of what it is to be truly, fully human, which is to be divine.
Mm-hmm. I always say he shows us what we're capable of.
You Absolutely.
Know, he shows us what resides within us, and it's up to us to almost have the courage to say, as you did, I can do. And I guess that takes courage. I guess it takes peeling the scales off of our eyes.
It takes faith, which is believing in yourself.
Yeah.
You know, faith is not a set of beliefs. There's a world of difference between beliefs, which are just ideas, concepts that people assent to, and you can change your beliefs. Faith's completely different. Faith, the Greek word pistes, has the meaning of entrusting yourself to. It's like getting on a plane and trusting the pilot to fly you. There is a sense of participating in, committing yourself to this reality. So to believe in Jesus, to have faith in the Christ, is to commit myself to be as he was, which is, of course, what he's talking about in John 6 when he says, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you've got no part in my life. So we have to become as if we were him. We have to be literally little Jesuses, little Christs, or little Buddhas. It doesn't matter which way you go with us, you know. That whole reality of a deeper self, or little princes, to put it in the terms of Antoine de Saint-Exupéry's language, because he, the little prince, opened the airman to see his essence, to see who he really was all along. And that is what the Jesus message is, to open us to see who we really are.
Or what Rebecca and I teach our the women in our groups is the goddess within. And we align each woman with their inner goddess that already exists, and we just allow her to become birthed, and, you know, so she's in touch with that amazing power. So, you know, whatever you call that power within, you can call it Sally if you want, but it's that it's unmistakable power. It's that, you know, connection to all that is, that connection to your well-being and absolute peace of purpose, and it's truly the way we are meant to be, like you said.
And you see, Christians who might be offended by a statement like that need to wrestle with some of these scriptures that I wrestle with in Your Forgotten Self. 2 Peter 1:4, for example, we are partakers of the divine nature. What does that mean? It means that my nature is divine just like Jesus is. I am participating in that same reality. So that means that God is seen in us. In God we live and move and have our being. And then Paul prays, Ephesians, Colossians, various other letters, he prays that their eyes may be opened, that they might see that they are filled with all the fullness of God. So it is about being manifestations of God and Goddess. It's about the whole of God, who is neither male nor female, but embraces it all, be manifested. It's kind of like taking a light and shining it through a prism, and you get different colors come out from the prism. Each of us are colors coming out from that prism of the one light that is divine.
Well put.
Beautiful.
Absolutely.
I like to like it.
Before we wrap up, is there anything else that you want to talk to our listeners about, David, as far as where, again, your website or where they can get the books or any last comments that you want to share?
Well, the book, of course, it's best if you get it directly from the Namaste Books book site, namastepublishing.com, www.namastepublishing.com, and they'll mail it to you right away, or go into a bookstore and ask for it. If they don't have it in, they can get it within a day or two because it's out at all the distributors now. You can get it online at Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com. But it especially helps us if you can help get it out into the mainstream by requesting it at your bookstore.
Mm-hmm. And it is
and that
Forgotten
That book, again, is called Your Forgotten Self by David Ord.
Mm-hmm.
Your Forgotten Self Mirrored in Jesus the Christ.
Yes.
And then the other book, which is available exclusively from the iStore at namastepublishing.com. That's N-A-M-A-S-T-E publishing, in case you're not getting my accent of how I say namaste. But namastepublishing.com, and the book there, the audio book, it's about 7 hours of listening, is called Lessons in Loving, A Journey into the Heart. And it unpacks the meaning of the story of the little prince in a way that applies to our personal lives and our relationships. If you want to know how to relate to a partner, a spouse, someone important in your life. This story is all about that. It's how to find the love that you really already are, but you just don't recognize you are.
Mm-hmm.
Lessons in Loving from www.namastepublishing.com.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much, David, for being on our show, Divine Manifesting. We appreciate you being here today.
Thank you. I've enjoyed talking with you both today.
Yeah, thank you so much, David. You're just inspiring and uplifting, and I encourage everybody to really go to Namaste Publishing, get yourself a copy, and I promise, you know, you will then go back and get a copy for every person that you love, because I agree with you, David. This is what will enlighten and...
It has the power to change our whole society and our world.
Yes, it does.
It really does.
You're a blessing. Thank you so much,
Thank
David.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Thank you, David.
Bye-bye.
So, Rebecca, what a great show with David, and I'm so glad. I knew you were you'd resonate with him.
Absolutely.
And the teachings, and definitely the book. I felt very, very connected to it, and it made me feel even more connected to Christ, by reading his book. And like you, I went to a Catholic school. I didn't go as many years as you did, and was, you know, raised in a Catholic family, and just never felt, I felt more of a sense of spirituality than I did connected to a religion. And it was just truly amazing. It connects that heart to that teaching and in the truth. So phenomenal book. And I think his teachings are really going to help a lot of people. So we have a few minutes, and I just wanted to invite all of our listeners to join me in a free teleseminar tomorrow night. You can go on to my website, and that's christywhitman.com. It's C-H-R-I-S-T-Y. Whitman is W-H-I-T-M-A-N.com, christywhitman.com. And on the homepage, there is a sign-up sheet, and I am doing a free teleseminar on how to find your ideal partner. And I normally don't do this. I do it one time a year because I have so many courses that I offer. And I've just, it's one of those things, you have to listen to the universe. And I've learned that lesson so many different times that I now listen to the universe. And I had a client who was in my July class this past summer call me, and she found the love of her life, and it's just an absolutely amazing story using the process that I teach. It's actually how I met and attracted Frederick, and how I actually used this process when I met my first husband as well. And it's just an amazing, amazing attraction process to bring in that, not a relationship where it's a personality to personality, where it's truly a connection of soul to soul, and it really is, does create amazing relationships. And so in one day I had one client call me and say, I found him. And then I literally had three other emails from clients out of the blue asking me about this course. And then I was doing a coaching call that night, and two of the people asked me about that. So I said, all right, the universe is trying to tell me something. So I am going to be offering this course. It's a four-week course, November 13th. It's starting on November 13th, which is a Tuesday. But to talk about it and to give you a little insight into the course, I'll be doing a little bit of a I will be doing a free teleseminar tomorrow night, Wednesday, at 9 o'clock East Coast time, which is 6 o'clock Pacific time. And like I said, you can go to my website, christywhitman.com, and sign up for the teleseminar. It is limited, so sign up as soon as you can. And Rebecca, did you have anything that you wanted to share with the group tonight, or the group, our listeners?
No, I would like to say that we are just this week, Chris and I both did a Power of Self-Love class, and it was, wouldn't you say, Christy, beyond phenomenal, if we do say so ourselves?
Well, it's not just us saying it, it's the people getting emails, and it's just amazing after each of the classes, each of the participants in the class are like, oh my God.
Yes, and we've had a phenomenal response, and we've had such a good time doing it, and I really just feel like the transformations into the goddess self, into everything we talked about today with David Ord, that really allowing yourself the power of self-love to become the god or goddess that you are. Everything that David talked about today in terms of not just worshiping all that is outside of you, but really becoming that and recognizing that is not arrogance. It's just totally... Oh, how would you say that, Christy? It's such a shift in consciousness. And in our Power of Self-Love transformational class, we have just had the best response. So I would like to say, if anybody is interested, gods and goddesses out there, really go either to Christy's website or mine, Rebecca Grotto, RebeccaGrado.com, and let us know, because we're getting a lot of interest in teaching another class soon. And so if you're interested in that, it is so worth your time and energy and effort. It's thrilling to watch people actually step into their goddess space. So
their power.
Their power. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a coaching call with one of our clients that are doing our class, and what we give as one of the bonus gifts is you get a half-hour session with either Rebecca or myself. And I had one of them with one of the ladies, and for the first time in her whole entire life, she stood up for herself. And she, you know, she had feelings of guilt when she did it, but at the same time, she said, it actually felt good. I stood up for myself. I stayed in my center, and I let my authentic voice come out, and I didn't repress how I was feeling anymore. And I thought, wow, you know, that's really what it is about. It's being able to be yourself and not repress yourself anymore, repress your emotions, repress how you feel, and to truly start living life. And, you know, the rest of the guilt that she was feeling was easy to work through, because it's just something that she hasn't made as a habit, hasn't learned, you know, for the almost 60 years that she's been on the planet. This is a new skill that she was able to implement, and it truly is amazing that, you know, these women that are in this class are just making these amazing changes. So I just wanted to share that with you, Rebecca. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I've been blown away by the feedback we've both gotten for this class, and it just really feels like it's so in alignment with what we're meant to be doing. So I really want to put out there, if you know, what you heard today with David has really made you hungry for shifting into that space, please go to Namaste Publishing and pick up his book, pick up his 5-pack CD set, and then contact Christy or I, and we will, you know, put another class together sooner than later. We weren't planning on putting one together right away, but the response is there, and I would be thrilled to put another class together within the upcoming months.
We're slotted for March to do our next class, but I'm thinking that the way that this one happened
exactly.
January might be better.
I'm thinking the same thing. So if there's interest, I think you and I are both committed to do it, and I think they would get so much out of it. So I think our time is up, Christy. This has been a great, great call today. So,
yeah. So, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. And next week we have another amazing author. It just keeps getting better and better. So thank you so much for listening, and I wish you all a blessed week.